Toronto sports fans, welcome to the hottest podcast in the city, Sports from the Six, here for episode number 15 with a special episode for you guys today. But before we get to all that, I'm always joined by my co-hosts, Dwayne, the body turner, and Ali Khan, the GM, Ravjani.
Boys, I'm the GM because I'm hot like fire and we in the six and we spitting up a storm. Let's do this.
Something like that, yes, but not quite. You know, we're here at episode 15, boys. We've come a long way. Special episode today. We got a full booth. Just happy to be here again, boys.
I know. I'm excited for the guests we have on.
Before we get to our special guest, though, Dwayne, I just got to show you some love, man, for those NHL predictions on the Cup Final. I went opposite of you and I came up goose eggs, pal. Congrats. Nice picks.
Thank you, buddy. I just hope that it carries over to the NBA Finals.
Well, you know, I'm pumping the tires a little bit. You know, the NBA Final predictions aren't done. No. But, you know, we're teeing up that as well. We're waiting for that. And I just want to know, since you're so hot with the Cup predictions, who's going to take the Cup this year, pal?
Pressure's on. You know what? I mean, everybody is saying the Blackhawks.
Right. They're the favorites.
I'm going to say...
Wow, he wants to get
Tampa
bold now.
Tampa Bay in seven.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow. Tampa Bay in seven. I'm in no position to doubt the man now. He's on fire. He's rolling. So you heard it here first. Dwayne the Body Turner is calling Tampa in seven. Ali Khan, what are you thinking, pal?
You know what? I love Dwayne the Body, and we have similar predictions for the NBA Finals. But I'm just going to have to respectfully disagree. But I got to say, in the words of Diana Ross, I stopped in the name of love, and I've given you... I've given you your due. You deserve it. You were the only one in the booth that guessed the finals right, but we're going to go right now. I'm going with the masses here. We're going with Blackhawks in six. Mm. Tampa's good. They're still young. They're going to be good for a while, but this is Blackhawk season, and Blackhawk down is not happening right
now. Wow. You know what? I learned the hard way disagreeing with Dwayne last week, and you know what, Dwayne? I'm sorry, but I'm going to disagree again. I'm going to play the safe route considering that I'm kind of beaten battered here with my predictions, so we don't need to, you know, reinvent the wheel or anything. Blackhawks in six. That's a deep team, confident team, and I think, you know, Captain Sirius Jonathan Toews is going to probably come up with that concept.
Still got mad love for Dwayne Turner, and knowing Dwayne Turner, we're probably going to be wrong. So, I mean...
We got mad love for Dwayne Turner, but we also have mad love for our first special guest, Marta Kruk, a former Division One NCAA tennis star, here to talk a little French Open tennis. Marta, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, you know what? Exciting time for tennis fans. We've got the French Open going on right now. So far, thoughts on the tournament, women's, men's, doesn't really matter. How have you liked the tennis so far?
I've really enjoyed watching. Obviously, big match this morning with quarterfinal action with Djokovic and Nadal. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have the King of Clay playing the best player in the world.
Right.
Definitely good tennis along the way, and I'm excited to see some more, hopefully Saturday, Sundays when the finals come out.
Yep, agreed. And now, speaking of the big match between Nadal and the world number one, Djokovic, did you think going into the match that Nadal would have put up more of a fight than he did today with Djokovic kind of dealing with Nadal's case a little bit?
Yeah, actually, I thought my prediction was Djokovic was going to win because he's had such a dominant he's been dominating the clay courts this year so far with winning two ATP 1000 events. But you know what? I thought it would be in five, but Nadal, obviously, you know, he still has a little bit of adjusting to do. And I think, you know, the role of injuries and kind of what that's done on his confidence, I think that's played a role, that's a factor. But I also think that, you know, Djokovic just playing too good at the end of the day. I mean, he was dominating, he was opening up the court and
agreed,
playing to his backhand. So
I'm with Marta here. I look at this tournament, what's gone on so far, and I look at Nadal coming in. He's a guy that had nine losses entering this tournament. Five of those were on clay, so clearly he hasn't been the same guy. His only tournament victory on clay was Buenos Aires, which, I mean, I don't know how much you take out of that. But you have Novak right now, who's separated himself in terms of the competition. We heard about the Big Four, everything coming into the year. But the last 2 years, he's really done his own part in separating himself. And now with Federer gone, with Nadal bounced, I mean, Andy Murray just looks like he's about to advance as we speak to the next round. So Has this really opened up, in your eyes, Marta, a chance for Novak to come out here and complete that career Grand Slam? He's 28 years old now. He's only a year younger than Nadal. Is this the perfect time for him to go out and get that done?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, I think he's playing great tennis. I think he's the favorite to win this tournament. And he hasn't lost a set so far. He hasn't dropped a set. And he's on fire right now. And, you know, with all due respect, you know, Murray has had also some great wins on the clay courts. But I think that, you know, Djokovic leads the series with 18-8. So head-to-head, you know, Djokovic does dominate Murray. And I think in those tight spots, those tight kind of under pressure situations, I think Djokovic will prevail in that. So yeah, it'll be interesting, but I think that he's the favorite to win this entire tournament.
So Martha, a question I have for you. You brought up the fact that Nadal is considered the king of clay. Do you think that this might mark the end of his reign, at least at the French Open, or do you believe that, you know, this was just a minor setback in terms of the injuries he's had to overcome? And do you think that he can still, I mean, we all know that he's easily considered one of the greatest, especially one of the greatest on clay, like you mentioned. But do you think that this might be a turning point in his career?
I don't know. You know what? What I can say is, you know, based off of kind of what we've seen in the past with Roger Federer and Pete Sampras, the greats, and obviously Nadal is up there with them. After, you know, their 29th birthday, they only managed to win one Grand Slam. So it gets tougher as you get older. And I think, you know, I think Nadal can still obviously win another French Open. I'm not saying that he can't, but I think it's going to be really tough. And, you know, just hopefully he won't get in any serious situations with injuries leading up.
Right. And Marta, you bring up a great point. Nadal is one of those guys that, even at his best, he's a guy that goes baseline to baseline. He's an attacking guy. But you've seen sort of as he's overcome these injuries, he's become more of a baseline guy that's played a bit more of a defensive style. And I think what happened is today, especially when I was watching in the morning, you saw Djokovic, he went from defending to attacking so quickly. And he's at that point in his career where everything's just working well for him. He's at a point that, I mean, they're really at different points of their career. We bring up that, yeah, they're not separated by a lot in age, but with all the injuries that Nadal's had to overcome, it wasn't that same feeling as the match with Soderling in 2009 where you were stunned. It was, you expected Nadal to lose, per se, but just not in the fashion that he did today, that straight sets, that sweep, that domination that Djokovic really had.
Yeah, and I think you said it earlier, is, you know, he hasn't had the best clay court season leading up to this. So, you know, and Djokovic has. So, obviously, he had the edge going into this. And, you know, you obviously can't rule out the king of clay. But I think his type of tennis, to be honest, even when he was playing before, it was kind of, he had to rely a lot on his stamina. And I think that, you know, as he's getting older and he's having more of these injuries, he's facing some troubles here and there in that aspect of his game. I think, you know, he's not able to maybe hang in there as tough as Djokovic, who's 110% healthy. And, you know, he looks fresh every time, like when he's, you know, third set, fourth set, he'll be looking fresh, right? So I think that's what it comes down to. And I think, you know, a little bit of confidence too. Nadal just needs to get that back up there.
So moving on to the women's side of the bracket, I was just wondering what your thoughts were on Eugenie Bouchard's early exit once again. And what do you think is happening with her over the course of this year? Because obviously she's been upset. She hasn't been living up to the expectations she set for herself from last season.
Yeah, and I think you said it right there, is expectation. So last year, she had an amazing year at 20 years of age. She did a great job at the Aussie Open and French Open with semi-final finishes. And she made history last year. She was the first Canadian to ever reach a Grand Slam final. And, you know, for female tennis, she's the first Canadian to reach the highest ranking in the world at number 6. So she's made history, and I think that's what it is. It's now a standard, you know, that she had all the success last year, and they expect that this year with her. And why I think she's losing so much in the first round is because she has that expectation in her head too. You know, she's trying to live up to the standard, and she basically has the pressure of a nation on her back. She's the only top-ranked player in the top 150. The next one that stands off is at 182, which is Gabrielle Dabrowski. So, you know, she's got everyone on her, you know, like everyone looking at her. So I think it's mental adjustments that she has to make. And I think this is going to be a transition year for her. And, you know, it's come to the point where no one's, you know, paid attention to her to now everyone paying attention to her. So it's kind of that scenario where, you know, the hunted is being, you know, the hunter is now the hunted, right? So that's what it looks like.
I think you bring up a couple of great points there with Jeannie. The expectations, I think that, you know, yeah, she can say she sets for herself, but that we have, as Canadian tennis fans, have set for her, I just think if we're maybe expecting a little bit too much too fast. I'm not counting her out by any means. She's only 21 years old, and yeah, maybe that's a little bit, you know, quote unquote, older than we think for tennis players in terms of she's going to be approaching her prime in a couple seasons. But I think we really need to be patient with her because, you know, yeah, she had a great season last year. She's struggling a little bit this year, but, you know, like you said, the next closest Canadian is, you know, not even close to her, and she's got the limelight, she's got the spotlight, and she's kind of the Canadian darling now, and we're all expecting her to do super well. And it's, you know, of course, it's a shame to see her bow out so early, but I think, you know, time will tell with her, and I think she'll be fine, realistically.
So you're telling me it's not the difference of having a $775,000 watch or not?
I would hope not, but, you know, it must be nice to rock things so fancy. But you know what? These tennis players are stars, and Nadal, what Ali Khan's speaking about is Nadal is wearing a very fancy million-dollar watch. But you know what? It comes down to tennis, and back to Bouchard, it's just, you know what? I hope she'll be there. The game will come around. I saw her talk about her early round exit and how she's working on things and, you know, not performing up to what she expects. But for me personally, I see her becoming a, you know, a bit of a fashion star. She's visiting soccer matches and becoming a bit of celebrity. And you know what? I don't want to say that that's taking away from the on-court performance. But, you know, for a 21-year-old, it would distract me. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point. You know, and eventually, like, we'll see down the road how she responds to the pressure. Yeah. And, I mean, this is not the first, you know, female tennis player that's kind of had a successful year and then fallen off. But in terms of, like, yeah, she obviously, you know, now she's more, like, kind of celebrity status. And, you know, at the same time, I think you can have it all, like, these players. You know, you see Serena Williams, she did some things with fashion.
Exactly.
And she's amazing. She's going for her 20th Grand Slam here.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think you can have it all. But the thing is, you do have to learn how to say no. And I think that's when, like, kind of an agent steps in. Mm-hmm. And kind of dictates, okay, well, this is not going to help me with my tennis, so I have to say no to this. And, you know, you're not going to make everyone happy at the end of the day, and you just have to focus on, you know, what's important for you. So I think, you know, Jeannie's kind of learning that along the way, and I think she will prevail. Like, I think she will come back from this, but you know, at the end of the day, she knows best, and, you know, it's just how she responds to pressure. And I obviously think, you know, she needs to also do a few adjustments, not just with her, you know, the mental aspect and her confidence, but also with her game, you know, and she's still developing. So hopefully along the way, you know, she'll make those adjustments, and we'll see a lot more of her in the future.
You brought up Serena Williams, Marta, and I want to just talk about what you think will, I guess, unfold here in the final couple of matches on the women's side. You have, I guess, a couple of Cinderella stories, if you will. You and I were talking about Safarova before and how she continues to maybe not upset but definitely play above expectations. And I just wonder, you know, obviously the favorite is Serena.
Hey, Bashinsky's given a good run too throughout this,
you know, another Cinderella story. But I watched Serena's match, and, you know, 6-1, 6-3, she defeated Rani, the 17th seed. And I just want to know, do you think she can be beat?
Well, Serena Williams, I mean, when she's under pressure, she's one of those players that does not fall. I mean, she's just so tough out there. She has another gear, and, you know, you've mm-hmm. seen it in the last three matches before this. She's lost. She's gone three sets, and, I mean, she proves that she's a champion. I mean, at the end of the day, she can perform under pressure. And I think what happened with those previous matches, with the ones that she played, the three sets, she had some issues with her serve, and I think she had some elbow problems or something with her arm. And you saw, I mean, her serving kicked it up another level against Irani. And I think, like, you know, if her serve's working for her, I mean, she has the best serve in the game, and I think if her serve's working for her, she is going to win this title. Obviously, the one weakness with her is her movement. You know, she's the older lady in the draw. She's at 33 years of age, right. And her movement's not the best. And on clay, you know, there's kind of a lot more shots being played on clay. So I think that's kind of the thing that is her weakness. But, you know, I always think she's the one to beat. She's just so tough.
So I guess we should also mention Anna Ivanovic. I mean, she was the champion in 2008, and she's probably playing her best tennis in a long time. What are your expectations for her going into the semifinal? Do you think that she can reclaim that glory she had 7 years ago? And do you think that she could possibly challenge Serena if they were to meet in the finals?
Yeah, I mean, Ivanovic is a great player. She dictates a lot of the points with her forehand. She's a great forehand. The thing with her is, I think her mentality, she's kind of up and down a lot. And I think her serve. I mean, you see when she tosses the ball, sometimes she's too far to the right or to the left. And so I think kind of issues with her serve. So if her serve is working well for her forehand, I think she can put up a fight. But to be honest, I think my favorite to win that is still going to be Serena. She, like I said, she's just so tough.
Yeah, Serena just happens to be one of those athletes. You and I, we spoke about this earlier, that just has that ability to turn it on or turn it off anytime they need to when the situation gets tough. And she's just one of those women that we love to watch playing. And speaking of women we love, we're also going to be bringing on Lauren to talk some soccer.
Nice segue, Martha.
So much for your
Martha,
help.
Much love. Thank you for coming on and dropping some tennis knowledge on us rookies, you know, so we appreciate it.
Well, thank you guys for having me.
You know, and shout out the Thunderbirds one time for you.
You know what they say, Marta, 30 love, 40 love. Marta always got love. Another person we got love here for.
That's right.
We're in love with the Lolo, and that is Lauren Maharaj.
She's stepping in, guys. She's stepping in. Stepping into the ring. It's Lauren's first time on the Sports from the Six podcast, so we're very privileged and happy to welcome Lauren Maharaj. Lauren, welcome.
Thank you, guys. I'm honored.
We appreciate that. You know, just three guys in here jabbing away about sports, one guy with a mafia angle, some guys with not, you know, but we're out here making predictions, talking a bit of smack, but, you know, you're bringing a little bit of legitimacy to our footy talk here, so we'll jump right into it. Huge Champions League final match coming up Saturday, Juventus-Barca. What do you think, Lauren?
What do I think?
How about, okay, what do you really think?
What do I really think? Well,
deep down, in there.
I'm trying to take the bias out of trying to please people in the class, namely someone who's a Juventus fan, I'm going to be honest.
You can name names.
We can drop the shout out, Lauren.
If you've been running through the six with your woes and Matt Malandrucolo, you can name as many names as you want.
Yeah, that might be the one.
Shout out Malandrukes one time.
I think it's really, really difficult to make a case for Juventus to overcome Barcelona at this point. And I don't think that the match is necessarily bound for a blowout. I don't think that Juventus is in a weaker position, but I do think that they are going into this as underdogs. And
definitely,
I think it would be really, really naive of somebody to think that Juventus would be able to have a better attacking outfit than Barcelona.
Right.
I think what Juventus is going to bring to the table is a really good, solid defense, and I predict that the first half will probably be a lot of rock solid, gritty defending. But I think if you've watched Barcelona over the course of the season, they've had a lot of first halves like that, and then for whatever reason in the second half they just come out, they find the space, and I don't know if it's because defenses have been fatigued, because they've been kind of put up against a wall against the three up front, but I can't see it going any other way but in Barcelona's favor. And even if it does go to penalties, if Juventus keep them as far off as possible to the very end, and they do go to penalties, I still can't see it going Juventus's way.
Okay, so Lauren, let's say we're living in a fantasy world and we have to somehow paint a picture of how Juventus could possibly pull off the upset. What would that 90 minutes of soccer have to be for them to be able to pull that off?
I think Well, Juventus's coach Allegri admitted that it's pretty much impossible to mark Messi. So in that instance, he's probably going to have his back four or three or five, however he decides to do it, probably four or five, mark all the guys around him who will offer assists. It's really hard when you're trying to mark three of the best players in Spain, at least, as well as not allowing them to get space all at the same time, because you have three guys who are all incredibly selfless together. I have the stats here for you, actually.
Yes, we love stats.
Preparation.
If you look at their Champions League record, you have Neymar with 9 goals and 1 assist, Suarez with 6 goals and 3 assists, and Messi with 10 goals and 5 assists. That's huge. Yeah. And I'm talking assists, which is huge. They're all pretty much on the same level except for Messi, who has the most assists and the most goals, which, unreal. In my opinion, it just makes him so complete. And it's really difficult to do that. But I think, if Juventus are able to really annihilate the possibility of space for Barcelona, they might be able to push them back from attacking. Also, another thing that is good is making sure that you can at least annihilate one of the three from being able to push forward.
Pick your poison.
And also another thing is the counterattack, which is really important. If Juventus can watch Barcelona's counterattack as well as use the counterattack in their advantage. So, for instance, if you look at how Barcelona play, they play as a unit and their fullbacks push forward and attack forward, and then in turn the midfield as well as the three up front can push the ball forward and attack. If Juventus can, you know, grab a ball off the rebound, or they can take advantage of the fact that the team plays so high up, they may be able to capitalize on that. But again, that's timing, and then they're still worrying about space, they're still worrying about mm-hmm. three of the best guys in the world up front, so it'll be really hard. But I predict it'll probably be a pretty defensive battle. They're gonna really look at that.
We like predictions on this show. What do you predict, AK?
I'm predicting a Barcelona win here. I think it's gonna be quite simple, quite easy. I don't think it's gonna be quite the hype that we're gonna see. Yes, Pogba's back and he's on his way to becoming one of the world's best. He's already in the conversation, but he's not there. He's not on Messi's level, and we all know. I mean, the beautiful goal he scored in Copa del Rey is just one of the examples of the kind of firepower that Messi brings, along with the rest of that team. But Lauren, as someone that's watched this Barcelona squad and the way they've played, they're a team that they're about to lose Dani Alves, they're about to lose Xavi, and they're on the verge here of winning that third championship after La Liga and Copa del Rey. What does it mean to those guys, as well as that whole Barcelona team, to be able to get that accomplishment this year?
Well, I think for guys like Neymar and Suarez, it's a big deal. I'm not saying it's another day for Messi. He's done incredible things. He was a part of the classic squad of 2011 who did some incredible things. But I think also what people are forgetting is that it's Luis Enrique's first year with the club, and he's achieved such great things so far. And if he's able to pull this off, you know, there's no reason why he shouldn't be considered one of the best coaches in the game, at least this season. But on the flip side, if Juventus were to pull it off, you know, same thing with Allegri. It's his first year with the club too. So, and it would be a little romantic, right? Because it's their first final in 12 years, and you know, it's kind of it would look like the resurgence of Italian football. So the match is a little historic, I think.
I agree.
And so just for that, there's magic, and I think it'll be really great. But again,
yeah, it's. Sorry, go ahead, Lauren.
I was just going to say again, I think it's going to be a Barcelona.
I'm super excited for the match. You know, there's going to be a big crew of us in Niagara Falls this weekend watching that game. So I just want to see a close match, a blowout would be kind of disappointing. I agree with you, though. I don't think there'll be a blowout. I think you're going to see Juventus's best on Saturday. I think they'll keep it close. I hope they keep it close. I think you bring up a great point with them trying to They're going to have to try and stop one of those three. And hopefully, you know, they find something to do with Messi, because at this point, you know, this guy is just, you know, I get excited. you know, I get excited about talking about certain things, and Messi is one of those things. I watch this guy, and I'm not necessarily the biggest footy fan, but he draws me to the game. And, you know, I think he's one of those athletes that kind of transcends the sport a bit. I think he's bigger than it, kind of, to a certain degree, and I just love watching Messi. And another one of those guys that I love to watch and that I have huge credit for is Gigi Buffon. And I don't know, I want to hear what you think about it in terms of, do you think he can be that X factor for Juventus? You know, we've seen it on the world stage with Italy. He came out with a quote this week talking about Messi, saying, "Messi is an alien that dedicates himself to playing with humans. The only hope is that this Saturday he will be from Earth like the rest of us." So with that said, do you think Buffon can be that X factor for Juve?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he has so much experience, and he's seen some of the biggest stages in football ever.
Yeah.
Obviously winning the World Cup is one of them. But I think it's his partnership with the center backs that makes it a really integral on Saturday. There was a report this morning, and I don't know if it's been confirmed yet, that Chiellini might not be available, and I think that would be a huge blow.
Yeah.
He's just so good at reading everything, and he's also a really good reader of the game and a good leader. You know, everybody keeps talking about the storyline with him and Luis Suarez and Patrice Evra, but the thing is like, Patrice Evra, he's very experienced, but, you know, his legs might be a little bit too tired for the way that Barcelona like to attack on the flank. So I don't know. I think just to answer your question simply, I think he can be the X factor, but again, his partnership with the center back is huge, and if they lose Chiellini, I think that would be a big blow.
And I mean, Philip, you bring a great point, because it's rare in soccer to see a goaltender that's been consistently good the way Buffon has been every single year, and to do what he's doing this year with that Juve squad, just, it continues to speak to his brilliance.
You know what, and you know, a little side note here, just for a little fun fact, if you Google Gigi Buffon, and then at the same time, bring up a new tab and Google Henrik Lundqvist, there is a crazy doppelganger resemblance thing going on here, and I don't know what it is, but Google it and check it out for yourself. There's a little side note, a little fluffy tidbit, but on the serious note, Champions League soccer is always super exciting, fun to watch, and maybe this wasn't the final of, you know, Real Barca or even Bayern or the big matchups. Like, Juve is a big Italian squad. It's just a shame because they're not getting the credit they deserve, I think. You know, what are they, three-time reigning Serie A champs, I think. And so I think they aren't getting the credit they deserve, and I really hope that they keep it close and that it's a great match Saturday, because a blowout, I think, would be unfortunate for fans. What do you think about that, Dwayne?
I don't think
you think Juventus is going to win.
No,
Let's not get crazy here.
I was just going to say.
The segment would be upset with you.
I think I'm the only one so far who hasn't said who I think is going to win, and I'm not going to stray from everybody else. Barcelona will most likely win this match.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the right side.
Yeah. Well, guys, remember,
Dwayne's on the right side. We can't be chirping
Dwayne. Yeah, right now. But
Dwayne's kind of the Teflon Don right now. Like, nothing's really sticking to him, so, you know, he's killing it. Go ahead, Dwayne.
So, no, I was just going to mention, because Lauren brought up the 2011 squad.
Yeah.
Before, I guess my first question to you is, do you think that the 2011 squad that won against Manchester United, do you think that this squad might be better than that one? First question. And
it's,
I guess,
a two-parter. Wow.
The second bit of my question is that that final, I believe it was 3-1, that Manchester United ended up falling to Barcelona at Wembley. To me, I mean, 3-1 on the scorecard, that doesn't necessarily seem like a blowout. But, I mean, that game was fully dominated by Barcelona from start to finish. So, I'll just remain with the first question. I just wanted to know, like, what do you... what was my first question again?
Dwayne, what was your first question?
That's what
again?
I'm trying to remember.
Dwayne, what was your third question?
Maybe it was... you were talking about the former team. Do you think they're as good as this Barca
team? That
formation
of it. Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
I'm out here.
All my picks. They're just, you know, these winning picks are getting to my
picks from the six.
Too many brown sauce drinks for old Dwayne there.
Well, I think that the team of 2011 was really considered one of the best because of a coach that they had, and I think it was also this, emergence of Messi on the, not necessarily the first time that he emerged on the big, emerged on the big stage, but he definitely started to become a household name at that point. I'm going to say I honestly think that this team could be considered better than that one. I've just never seen a front three who have been so selfless together. And I think it is so, it has been so integral to every single victory they've had so far. Like, if you look at the stats before Suarez came in October after his ban, he has provided, I think, something like 23 assists overall in all competitions. That's huge. That means he's looking out for not only himself, but his teammates. And also, he scores goals too. He's not shy of it. So they're always thinking about how they can win the game as opposed to how they can, you know, up their own tallies. And that, for me, is huge. And I'm not, and I, we have some Real Madrid fans in the house, not in the house, but in our class. And like I don't, I
said, you can name names.
We can throw the
shout-outs.
I'm
not bashing, but I have to say, this is why Barcelona, the Barcelona of today, is probably going to have a more solid foundation than the Real Madrid of today and yesterday. Because
there it is for you, Nelson. Sorry, read it and weep, bud.
Well, sorry, look, Nelson, I mean, tiki-taka.
If you have three guys like Bale, Benzema, and Ronaldo, namely Ronaldo, who's incredibly driven by individual awards, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. It's difficult to assume that they're going to have a team ethic on the pitch when one person is always dominating goal scoring as opposed to trying to work with each other. And, like, you know, I just think that that's been the biggest thing for their front three this season, and that's one of the biggest reasons why they faltered, because they just didn't want to work together. There were too many individuals, and Barcelona has always kind of been that team collective, and I think that that's coming back now.
So just a quick question for me, and I think this was the second one that I was trying to remember.
Yes, Dwayne.
Just trying to make up for all
he's
that.
He's back.
I just wanted to kind of change it up a bit and ask you what your thoughts on were, because I know how excited you are for the Women's FIFA World Cup coming up. What do you think is going to end up happening? Like, what are some of your predictions?
Okay, well, I think everybody and their grandmother should be watching out for France. I'm not a France fan. I'm
Vive
cheering
la France.
For Canada all the way. And I think that Canada has a really strong case. They're more than likely going to win their group, but they have a strong case to make it pretty far. And I think they're going to ride off of heart. Although they have some fantastic players, really young girls who are just ruthless on the pitch. I was really lucky to go to the friendly last Friday, and they had a great performance. They really controlled the game against England. But I'm telling you, watch out for France. Their under-21s were fantastic last year. I'm surprised they didn't win the World Cup. But, yeah, France for me, and then obviously the usual prospects, USA, Sweden, and Germany are all going to be really incredible. There's a lot of debutantes in Spain, the Netherlands, I believe Norway as well. I can't remember all of them, but there are a few clubs who are debuting for the first time, and they have, you know, some really great individual talents who have played all over Europe and the U.S., so watch out for them. So yeah, keep your eyes open for France, I'm telling you. And if they let me down, then I apologize, everybody.
Speaking of things to keep your eyes open for, reports emerging today that Andrea Pirlo has tentatively agreed to go to New York City FC after this season, joining David Villa and Frank Lampard. Now, of course, they're not confirmed yet. Things are still in the works, whatnot, but it's a report. The MLS has made waves now this last little bit. We see it here in Toronto with Sebastian Giovinco. Obviously, Lampard and Villa are huge for an expansion team like New York. What do you think an impact signing like that does for the MLS as a league?
Well, I mean, the MLS has done a lot with all their signings thus far. I mean, they've got Gerrard, they've got Lampard, they've got Villa, they've got Beckham, they've got Kaká. Now they tentatively got Pirlo. And, I mean, I've always had a little bit of a problem with the MLS signing all these kind of semi-retired guys because I don't think it helps the credibility of the league. And I really hate to say it, but it's just true. I wish they would spend a little bit more time looking at their own homegrown guys.
Like me.
And well, yeah. I saw what you did in the courtyard.
Wow.
Unreal. And then I almost hit the window.
Calling
anyway,
you out.
But, you know, I just think that it takes away from some of the North American talent that deserve a little bit of being looked at. But Obviously, I think with new NYFC, it's huge. I mean, now they have three big superstars, and Pirlo, I mean, the guy's going to be playing probably until he's like 70 years old, and he's still going to have so much elegance. So it's great. It's absolutely great. But
again. You know what? Speaking of elegance, thank you both to the elegant ladies that added their knowledge and presence today in the booth. Very thankful for having Lauren and Marta on. Very thankful to all our fans out there who have helped us push past 10,000 views on the podcast.
10 G's.
You know what? It's just I'm very happy. You know, I'm a happy Torontonian today. Just happy to be from this city representing the Six and talking sports. And thank you very much for listening. Continue to support. On behalf of Ali Khan and Dwayne, this is Flip signing out.